Medical rewrites, medical rewrites, medical.
Hello and welcome to Medical Rewrites, the podcast that rewrites movie scenes with evidence-based medicine. I'm Megan Jeffries. The rewrite today is for The Menu. The deep dive is about infections associated with eating dry-aged meat, because of course you need to know the answer to this. Of importance, this episode does not contain spoilers for the movie The Menu. The Menu was released in 2022, relatively early for movies on this podcast. Budget was $30 million and it grossed $80 million, which is a shockingly low number considering how good this movie is. IMDb only gives this 7.2 out of 10 stars or points, which is far too low for how good this is. Rotten Tomatoes critics gave it 88%, audience gave it 76%, but the most important score is an A+ from my cousin Cody the Chef, who's a James Beard Award nominee. The Menu's a dark comedy slash horror-ish movie that centers around a young couple, Margot, played by Anna Taylor-Joy, and Tyler, played by Nicholas Hoult. Together with 10 other very rich and or famous people, they take a private boat ride to remote island to dine at the very exclusive restaurant called Hawthorne. The restaurant's run by celebrity chef Julian, played by Ralph Fiennes. Amazing. Before the guests ever enter the restaurant, however, they get a tour of the grounds. The tour is led by the maitre d' of the restaurant. Her name's Elsa. She's played by Hong Chow. And the scene you're about to listen to is Elsa showing them the building on this secluded island that she calls the smokehouse. Anne, roll the clip.
And I'm close personal friends with the chef.
Okay, Blair.
Our smokehouse is in the Nordic tradition. We use the meat of dairy cows only, which we age for an astonishing 152 days to relax the protein strands.
Yes.
Can I pop in there?
Dude, I read about one of these.
Oh, yeah. Can I check it out?
Korean yes, barbecue. But please do not touch our proteins. They're immature.
So what happens if you serve it on the 153rd day? Does all hell break loose? Or?
Well, I suppose the bacteria would introduce itself to the consumer's bloodstream and spread into their spinal membranes, after which point he or she would become incapacitated and shortly thereafter expire. So yes, all hell would break loose. Good thing we're pros, yes?
There's a lot to unpack from this relatively short scene. The medical piece can be simplified relatively easily. Elsa's implying that if people were to eat overly aged dairy cow meat, they would develop bacterial meningitis. The dairy cow piece to me is wild. Having grown up in a small cattle operation in Wyoming, the idea of eating old dairy cow is bizarre at best. In general, beef cattle are bred to maximize production of muscle and fat. Dairy cows are bred to maximize the production of milk. That's why the skeletons of dairy cows are so prominent. They don't have much muscle or fat on their bones. And that's good. It's a bred trait in dairy cows. That means all of their energy is being spent on milk production and not on fat or muscle production. To contextualize the strangeness of eating dairy meat, I'm going to take us a brief tangent on the life cycle of dairy cows compared to a typical market beef, because of course that's what you expect from this podcast. Here it goes. Market beef breeds like Angus, Charolais, Hereford. By the way, shout out to Barry Herefords in Cheyenne, Wyoming, been producing world famous Herefords since 1910. Friend of the pod. Market beef are bred in the spring. Then they're sent out to pasture over the summer to graze on lands so they don't have to be fed hay and corn, etc. And then in the winter, they're brought back close to home so they can calve and everyone's available on hand to help them give birth if there's any complications. Those calves then drink mom's milk until the fall when they're weaned, separated, and then they're put into feedlots or the owner feeds them until they're about 18 months old or somewhere between 1,200 and 1,500 pounds. At that point, they're sent off to slaughter and then we eat them, you know, relatively short while later. The life cycle of a dairy cow is much longer. After birth, a female cow will get to eat and grow until she's around 2. She will then have her first calf. That starts the lactation process. She then has another calf every 13 or so months to keep that sweet, sweet milk flowing. According to a study published in the Journal of Dairy Science, it costs approximately $2,000 to raise a dairy heifer. In the U.S., it takes 2 full lactation cycles of selling milk to recuperate this $2,000 cost. So it isn't until the third lactation cycle where revenue finally surpasses cost. If you do some quick math, it tells us that by the time a dairy cow has 3 lactation cycles, she's at least 5 years old. This is 3 years older than any standard market beef animal would be. The age is important because the older cattle are, muscles get tougher and fat gets also tougher. So fat turns sort of yellow and muscles get really dark compared to what you're used to seeing in the grocery store, which is bright red muscle with bright white fat. Eating a 5-year-old dairy cow whose genetics are focused on milk production at the expense of fat and muscle is just odd to a Wyoming girl. I assume the writers of this movie were ill-informed about the beef eating practices in the U.S., but turns out I might be the one that's behind the times. According to several food blogs, old meat, or old cow, is very on trend. One food blog stated that for an old cow to be delicious, it must be at least 10 years old. This is wild. Asking a rancher to if they have eaten a 10-year-old cow, I just can't imagine anyone being like, oh yeah, of course, I've had that experience. This is this food blogger's opinion. 10-year-old cow, that's what it needs to be to good. The same blog also advocated for dry aging of old dairy cows. They said that after dry aging, the flavors are further intensified and complemented by the nutty notes of maturation, which by itself is an absolutely hilarious sentence. Another sentence worth cutting and pasting from a different food blog is, retired dairy beef is designed to reward your taste buds with its complex, mature, marbled texture, delivering a burst of flavor in a similar fashion to blue cheese for cheese lovers. So if you are a blue cheese lover or a sort of an extreme cheese lover, or you probably even an extreme wine lover, turns out you might also like old dairy cow. Considering the restaurant in the menu, Hawthorne, is super exclusive, super expensive, we may also assume that it is progressive and does indeed dry age dairy cow meat. Okay, dairy cow tangent over, back to the medical issue and the deep dive of this episode. The question is, can eating overly dry aged beef cause bacterial meningitis, as Elsa's rant to Tech Bro said it might? Part one is really understanding the normal pathogenesis of bacterial meningitis to determine if it could be possible to get meningitis from a food source. Step one of community-acquired meningitis is the colonization of mucous membranes. Mucous membranes could be in the respiratory, GI, or genital tracts. Then bacteria have to break through normal barriers into the bloodstream, then survive the immune system within the bloodstream, and finally break into the subarachnoid space, which is where the spinal fluid is. Pathogens that are most successful at causing bacterial meningitis are Streptococcus pneumoniae, Neisseria meningitidis, Haemophilus influenza, Group B strep, or Streptococcus agalactiae, Listeria monocytogens, and on rare occasions, E. coli. Many of these pathogens have skills that allow them to survive the gauntlet of the immune system and survive long enough to invade the CSF. Strep pneumo, Neisseria, and Haemophilus are all encapsulated by sugary outer shells. Think M&Ms. The M&Ms have this protective outer shell that protects the inner gooey chocolate, but in this metaphor is the gooey center, the nucleus of a bacteria. Encapsulation inhibits the binding of complement and targeting for destruction. It also helps to avoid phagocytosis because it makes them slippery. Most of these bacteria also have the ability to stick to mucosal surfaces through the use of pili or fimbriae, so lots of tricks up their sleeve. Strep pneumo has yet one more trick in addition to being encapsulated. It has the ability to avoid destruction by IgA. IgA is the immune globulin that's present on a lot of mucosal surfaces, like nose, eyes, etc. Strep pneumo actually produces an IgA protease, so therefore destroys IgA, thwarting its initial identification as an enemy of the body. Very sneaky, strep pneumo. Once these pathogens break through mucosal membranes, they must outlast the gauntlet in the immune system to get into our bloodstream. Folks that are lacking a spleen, functionally and or surgically removed, those that are asplenic, these are especially prone to infection from encapsulated bacteria. We think of the spleen as a sort of car wash with those ropes that swing back and forth or sponges that swing back and forth. That process that happens in the spleen roughs up bacteria that are encapsulated, which makes them easier to target and kill and get phagocytized. Bacteria transitioning from the bloodstream into the subarachnoid space also need, in addition to some luck, some time and just sheer numbers. This means that the duration of bacteremia and bacterial inoculum are positively associated with successful invasion. Given enough time and enough players on the field, bacteria can eventually sneak through the blood vessels into the brain and into the CSF. Once in this subarachnoid space, it's a party. Bacteria can replicate free from enemies due to the lack of immune cells that are in the CSF. So part one, invading mucosal membranes to the bloodstream to the CSF. Part two is, do any of the bacteria found in dry-aged beef, are any of them capable of overcoming all of these obstacles required to get into the CNS? There are several studies evaluating the microbiology both of the crust and the center of dry-aged beef. So the crust is the outer side that has less water than obviously the center of a steak or a roast. And that's the big difference in terms of microbiology, is the absence and presence of water. All of these studies are out of Europe. The U.S. has yet to really take on the science or the microbiology evaluation of dry-aged meat. So either we're behind the times in the U.S. of eating dry-aged meat, or we just don't care about the microbiology of it. Not super sure. The best study is out of Belgium. It's a cross-sectional study of 15 dry-aged meat stores in Belgium. They gathered demographic and dry aging variables and sampled the crust on multiple loins. Loin is the big back muscle that comes off of a market beef, or in this scenario, any sort of dairy cow. They sampled both part of the muscle and the fat for analysis. The age of the loins were 22 days to 78 days, which is certainly shorter than the 152 days in the movie. There are studies sampled 30 loins and the usual suspects were found. They found anaerobes, Enterobacteriaceae, Pseudomonas, Bronchothix thermophagia, lactic acid bacteria, and yeast. There was no E. coli and no Listeria monocytogenes. In my deep dive of the microbiology of dry-aged meat, I learned that Bronchothix thermophagia is a bacteria that produces acetic acid and acetone from glucose under anaerobic conditions. It is known, it's the most popular, the reason it's famous, the reason that it's known in the food world is because it is responsible for spoiling meat and the smell associated with spoiled meat. Of interest, if you have a bunch of lactic acid bacteria, that limits the production of this Bronchothix and decreases the amount of spoilage you get with meat. So there you go. There's another study out of Japan. This study analyzed the microbiology from two rumps of Holstein steers. Holstein is a dairy cow breed. One was, they called it dry naked, and one was wet aged in a vacuum bag for 35 days. By the time they were sampled, both samples had a bunch of molds and yeast, but none of them had coliforms. There was no E. coli, for instance, that was identified from the dry-aged beef. In France, they had 58 dry-aged samples from four different sources. They sampled directly from beef producers, took samples from supermarkets, butcher shops, and an artisanal butchery that only butchered local animals. All of the samples had yeast and molds, and most of them had Pseudomonas and Enterobacteriaceae, but E. coli, of importance, the only source that had E. coli was from a supermarket, meaning it's not super common to have any E. coli on dry-aged beef. So in summary, these studies show that dry aging is perhaps arguably protective against pathogenic organisms commonly associated with eating beef. In none of these studies, again, out of Japan and Europe, found Salmonella, found E. coli 0157, or Listeria monocytogenes. None of these three appeared to be able to survive the dry aging process. As a double check, I used the National Outbreak Reporting System, abbreviated as NORS. This is a dashboard that's available on the CDC website to investigate if Listeria and E. coli outbreaks caused any meningitis. According to the NORS dashboard, there were two beef-related Listeria outbreaks in the database. Both occurred in 1999, one in Florida and one in New York. The food source in the New York outbreak was a hot dog, and Florida was sliced deli roast beef. There isn't any data on how the infections manifested, but they reported there were six illnesses, two hospitalizations, and one death. Very possible that any of these six illnesses could have been meningitis. We don't know that answer. A search for dry-aged resulted in zero hits. So obviously we know that hot dogs and deli-sliced roast beef are not dry-aged. Of note, the database only includes data up through 2022, does not include the most recent Listeria outbreak associated with Boar's Head sliced deli meat. I think liverwurst is going to end up being the one that's blamed there, which sounds gross anyways. But for those of you that are big fans, don't eat the Boar's Head liverwurst. Currently, that outbreak accounts for 57 hospitalizations, 9 deaths across 18 states. Again, the CDC has not reported manifestations of this, whether it included meningitis, but that would be a likely outcome for patients that have a Listeria infection, is that meningitis occurred in at least some of these. The last update of this data was over a month ago in early August, so these numbers might actually be low. Outbreaks associated from beef are far more likely to be from E. coli. There have been 163 outbreaks causing 2,508 illnesses, 572 hospitalizations, and 10 deaths. The 2000s were an especially rough decade for E. coli and beef outbreaks. The last 15 years have been steady at 1 to 8 outbreaks per year, which still feels like a tremendous amount of E. coli outbreaks. This is just because E. coli 0157 happily lives in the guts of cows, but in humans, it runs amok and causes a bunch of GI distress. So based on the available primary literature, although imperfect, I'm declaring the need for a rewrite. The biggest data limitation is the lack of microbiology data for prolonged aged beef. ELSA tells the guests that they age their dairy cow meat for 152 days. The longest any beef was aged in the literature that I found was 78 days. I'm okay with this limitation because the number of bacteria on the crust of dry aged beef tends to stabilize and even decrease with age. It's likely due to the lack of water that's available as the meat product ages. We can postulate that the bacteria load after day 152 was actually greater than the population at day 153. So here's the rewrite. We need to delete the tangent about bacterial meningitis because this seems exceedingly improbable based on the microbiology associated with dry aged beef. If we keep Tech Bro's line where he asks what happens if you eat the meat on day 153 instead of the preferred age of 152, the real answer is nothing. Nothing microbiologically would be different between day 152 and 153. In order for ELSA to be able to put Tech Bro in his place and demonstrate her superiority of knowledge, we need to change his line to, what if we eat it before day 152? Does all hell break loose? Keeping with the tone and the rhythm of ELSA's original response, we end up with something like this. This will be AI generated.
Well, I suppose the outer crust of the beef would still be wet and support bacterial growth. This would increase the consumer's risk of foodborne diarrhea, causing dehydration, hypokalemia, and eventually ventricular arrhythmia. They would become incapacitated and shortly thereafter expire. So yes, all hell would break loose.
The rewrite is dramatic, but she needs to be dramatic in this particular setting of the movie. And dying from VFib after eating spoiled beef is in fact a long shot. However, I'm postulating it's far more likely than contracting bacterial meningitis. As always, check out the show notes for references used in this episode. Please tell a friend or colleague about the show so I can tell my boss that this podcast is a hit. If you think there's a movie that deserves a rewrite, click the link in the show notes and complete the form. Bonus points for ID-related rewrites. This has been a podcast presentation by me, Megan Jeffries. Production and editing by Anne Conley, a woman so talented she can cook minute rice in 30 seconds. And music by Brandon Meager.